Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today. Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Images of victims of the Troubles in Northern Ireland were projected onto the British Houses of Parliament at Westminster last night as family representatives made an 11th-hour plea to the UK government to rethink its controversial legacy legislation as it returns to the House of Lords today. The bill is almost 100 pages long and it promotes the establishment of an independent commission that would deal with more than 1,000 unsolved killings. And it offers a conditional amnesty to those accused in exchange for cooperating with the commission in their investigations. Tánaiste Micheál Martin has confirmed that the government here is taking legal advice over the legislation, which offers an effective immunity from prosecution for perpetrators of crimes during the Troubles who cooperate with the Truth Recovery Body. For more on this, I'm joined by Sam McBride, Northern Ireland editor with the Belfast Telegraph and Sunday Independent, and Peter Sherlow, director at the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies. And good morning to you both. Sam, if I could start with you. For people who mightn't be following these developments forensically, what exactly is the implication of this bill? And does it mean that we'll never see another court case relating to any historic deaths from the Troubles again?
So the central and the most controversial element of this bill is that it gives complete immunity from prosecution to people who cooperate with this new body. This new body is going to be headed by Sir Declan Morgan, the former Lord Chief Justice of Northern Ireland. He's a very widely respected judge. And I think actually, if they were looking for somebody to carry out this almost impossible job, he was perhaps the best person they could have found for that role. He is in post already. That's quite unusual. This bill has not yet made it onto the statute book. It has not yet got through Parliament. It has already been tinkered with a bit, but there is a strong expectation, such a strong expectation, that it will become the law that he is already in post. I mean, that really tells you something. It's very unusual for somebody to precede the law which gives them authority, if you like. And so therefore, there is a situation where he is already, for instance, doing media interviews. He was speaking to my colleague Alison Morris last week, and he was saying to her that he would, for instance, welcome legal action by the families of some of the victims who are furious at this to try to clarify exactly what the law is. So he is making the point that when Parliament passes this, when this becomes law, there is still the final hurdle of the courts looking at this and saying, is it compatible with, for instance, the European Convention on Human Rights? Is it compatible with other legal obligations on the UK government? And so that is something which, again, is going to delay this process. So we're a long way from this actually happening. We're a long way, I think, from people actually formally getting a piece of paper in their hand that says you're immune from prosecution. But already what this has done is stir up an awful lot of anguish among some very hurt people in Northern Ireland. This whole idea, the whole argument for it, there are lots of arguments against it, but the whole argument for it was that it was meant to remove the dark hand, if you like, of the Troubles from current life, from current politics in Northern Ireland. In fact, at this point, it's adding to it. It's adding to the sense of injustice, it's adding to the conspiracy theories, it's adding to the intercommunal tension. And so this task has been given to somebody who is facing incredible problems in just getting this off the ground, let alone making it a success. Mm-hmm.
And who also accepts the inevitability of legal action. And we know that victims groups are universally opposed to this bill, Sam. We had Gráinne Teggart on here yesterday from Amnesty International Northern Ireland, and she called this a grave betrayal of victims. So is it inevitable that there will be legal action?
Oh, certainly. I mean, Sir Declan Morgan said to my colleague last week that there have already been legal firms speaking to him. He's obviously well known in what is a small jurisdiction. People are coming to him and saying, we will be challenging this. And his only plea there, if you like, was that those actions would be dealt with briskly by the courts, that this would be fast-tracked through the legal process, so there would be certainty there. But I think that one of the political elements of this, which is also causing difficulty right now, is that Sinn Féin are at the forefront of opposing this. So they are standing with victims. They are standing with placards saying, "This is an outrage. This is a gross injustice. And this is something that we will not stand for. We will fight against." And that in itself is causing enormous hurt to some victims of the IRA, because they know that Sinn Féin in the past has been very supportive of getting amnesties for their own former members who were also members of the IRA. There have been cases where, for instance, senior members of Sinn Féin have been arrested in recent years in connection to allegations linked to the Troubles, and Sinn Féin have led protests outside police headquarters over that. So what really I think is annoying Sinn Féin here is that this is going to be a general amnesty. It will apply to the soldiers at Bloody Sunday as much as to the IRA bombers and to loyalists and to everybody who was involved in this. And that is causing a lot of pain to victims of the IRA in particular.
Okay. Sam, will you stay on the line, because I want to come back to you to find out more detail on what's next in the PSNI search for a new chief constable after the resignation of Simon Byrne yesterday. But I'm joined now by Peter Sherlow, as I said, director at the University of Liverpool's Institute of Irish Studies. And Peter, victims groups are unhappy, as outlined so well there by Sam McBride. And we have all of the main political parties in Northern Ireland who are opposed to this. Do you understand why the British government is ploughing ahead with the bill today?
Well, I think this is, can I just say one thing which is interesting, is we already have had effectively amnesty with regard to the disappeared and all of the information that was passed to the body that was dealing with that came through protected disclosure. Mm-hmm. So the legacy bill simply actually continues that approach to legacy. It's not anything that is actually new. I think one of the things about it is political parties may well say that they oppose it, but most certainly privately some of those political parties are keen for there to be amnesty, because you know if we want to open up the millions of words of files that are held by the British state, there are many people who were involved in collusion who would find it very uncomfortable for that information to come out. And I think effectively what we have here is a recognition that you're not going to solve this problem to the criminal justice system. Clearly, you know, I think fewer than 10 people have been imprisoned under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement. You think about this, Claire, as something that happened in 1972 or 1973. The witness was 50 years of age, person who witnessed it. That person is probably not going to be around today. What we also have, Claire, is very clearly, you know, so people like myself, and I'm sure Sam and others, often drive past wall murals which commemorate people who killed people that they knew. So it's not just that the British state has brought forward a very complex and contradictory bill, but since 1998, basically politicians in this society and others have done nothing but rub victims' nose into the dirt. And if the criminal justice system is not going to work, then what is? And I think this is a really important societal question, mm-hmm. because the point that Sam has made is that people who do have information that they could pass on to families do not provide that information.
Do you think they would, Peter, if this independent commission was to go ahead?
Yeah, well, it would have happened in the past. So I said that it disappeared. That was protected disclosure. What we're talking about here is protected disclosure.
There was one point that you made earlier on, that it might be very uncomfortable for people who were involved in collusion if files were to be opened. Would that not happen, though, if we had this independent commission for reconciliation and information recovery?
No, because the information would probably only go to the families. It would only be given to the families. So basically, you would have a process that somebody would get a knock on the door and they would be asked to explain their actions, accountability for their actions, and then that would be relayed to the families as protected disclosure.
Mm-hmm. But even that would be very uncomfortable for some of these people involved.
Well, of course it would be, and that's the whole reason why the victims' issue has been treated so badly. Because at the heart of all of this, Claire, lies the reality of collusion. At the heart of this lies the fact that the majority of people who died in Northern Ireland were civilians. At the heart of this lies the fact that half of the people who were killed in Northern Ireland have no commemoration, have had no justice, and have had no recognition for what happened to them. Mm-hmm. What we've had is a completely politicised approach to legacy, which has actually redoubled the hurt and harm that has been caused to people. What you're asking for is a moral question. Should we as a society have a proper process of truth and reconciliation? Of course we should. Who is against that? Politicians and those who were involved in the conflict. It's very clear here also that this bill is about not only protecting the British Army, it's also about protecting informants, and it's also about protecting people who are raiding the British state. And there is this was, as David Irvine once said, the loyalist leader, this was a dirty, pernicious little war, and I wish I'd never been involved in it.
Yeah, well, Alistair Logan is on the line too, the solicitor who represented Gerry Conlon and his father, Giuseppe. Alistair, good to talk to you again, and thank you for joining us. The last time we spoke was just after the broadcast of the documentary In the Name of Gerry Conlon, that was about the Guildford Four, and the issue of the British government sealing the files relating to that case for 75 years. And that case highlights some of the very specific issues around how all of this could play out. Can you tell us the relevance today of the Troubles Legacy Bill in relation to the sealing of those files?
Well, good morning, Claire. I think what we need to remember is that this is actually a bill which is focused on Northern Ireland. The clue is in the title. They haven't made any attempt to deal with any of the issues relating to terrorist activity and in Great Britain. There isn't any current investigation underway, and so that could mean that they would never have any further investigation. But what is not clear is whether this new independent body will work of its own volition. In other words, it will choose which cases it investigates, or whether it is going to be triggered by a member of a family who lost somebody in the course of the Troubles, and therefore take that case up. Mm-hmm. Were they to look into the 3,500 cases in Northern Ireland and also the large number of cases where terrorist activity took place in the Great Britain, then we would be looking at a huge investigation. One has to remember that the Bloody Sunday inquiry took as long as it did and cost as much as it did, and that, I think, involved 12 members of the British forces. We can probably find that there will be corner cutting here. I mean, after all, if all that the commission has to do is to say what they found out, if they found out nothing, then you get a one sentence reply, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Can I come
and
back?
I think you're going to find that this is going to be contested on a number of levels. First of all, there is the serious issue about whether this bill is compliant with Article 2 of the Convention, which requires the state to carry out an effective investigation into cases where people died or suffered serious injury. It's also in breach of the Stormont House Agreement, in particular paragraph 21. And there may well be a myriad of claims going before we actually find out what this independent body is capable of doing and how it is going to go about doing it.
Okay.
So far as the papers in relation to Gerry Conlon are concerned, and the Guildford Four, and indeed the Maguire Seven, there is nothing in the bill that suggests that this new independent body would investigate a case where there has already been a public inquiry. I say public, it wasn't. The aspect of the Guildford Four was not held in public, and therefore it was a private, secret inquiry into that.
And Alistair, can I ask you, because one of the reasons given for sealing those files for the length of time, 75 years, was that there were active investigations underway. Would you be advising whoever's handling that case now to make a fresh appeal for those files to be unsealed in light of that argument about active investigations?
Well, yes. I mean, the forces involved in the Guildford Four case have all said there is no active investigation. So the assertion by the Home Office that there is nonsense. There is a lot of secrecy involved in this because the other ground on which they rely is state security. And we have not got any indication in this bill as to how they will handle state security except some reference to knocking out names so that you don't know who they're talking about, redaction of documents and so on and so forth. So it's far from clear whether we would be able to get those documents which have been locked up and whether, in fact, the Commission has any power to force the Home Office to unlock them.
Yeah, and Peter Sherlow, to come back to you on this, I mean, there's a very real risk here that the people who hold many of the secrets of the Troubles, they might choose to remain silent about their role, and then there'll be others who might know very little, and they might seek to amplify their past role for ideological gain. Do you see that as being a problem?
Well, I think the problem will be clearly with people who are in paramilitaries is that if they get a knock on the door, some will, of course, stay completely quiet, and will, you know, there will be theoretically they would be prosecuted if there's enough information to take them to court. There may be some who then turn around and say, "I wish to admit to what I did. I wish to discuss that," and that's going to cause a major friction within those organisations because there is a rule of emerita, and but, you know, and that silence will be broken. But the thing we keep getting away from, Claire, is the fact the majority of people who died in our conflict were civilians. And what we have done is just dishonoured them. And the point was made there by Alistair. Over 60,000 people in Northern Ireland were seriously injured. Virtually nobody was prosecuted for the injuries that were caused to them. Mm-hmm. And this comes to the heart of the problem. This is what Declan Morgan said in the newspaper yesterday. This is clearly a political weaponized approach to legacy. By all of the people who were involved in the conflict, it is not about memorialising the shared suffering that took place in this society. It is not about building reconciliation within this society. It is about keeping pernicious, dirty little secrets away from public scrutiny and therefore trying to airbrush the past.
All right,
and quite clearly, the past cannot be airbrushed because it is about the most heinous thing that can happen, which is the taking of life. And there being no responsibility for that. I'm not against there being an amnesty, because there was an amnesty, as I said before.
Yes, with the
disappeared. But there has to be a process here now of accountability. There was a Red Sea poll recently in the South, and the majority of people under the age of 35 thought the British soldiers killed more people in Northern Ireland than any other group. That is just not true.
All right.
And so this does have severe political repercussions if we don't get to the truth.
All right, Peter, leave that one there. That's Professor Peter Sherlow and Alistair Logan. But Sam McBride is still with me. And Sam, I want to talk to you about what happens now in the wake of the PSNI chief constable, now former, Simon Byrne, bowed to weeks of pressure and resigned his position. It was appearing after the weekend as though it was fairly inevitable that he had to go.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was completely clear on Friday. I think it's fair to say that his position was totally irretrievable. He had come out on the Thursday and said that he was thinking of appealing this court judgment, which had said that he had basically bowed to pressure from Sinn Féin, pressure which Sinn Féin says didn't come. So pressure which they say was basically in his head. But whatever about the precise nature of what passed in those phone calls between Sinn Féin and him, he told the court essentially through written evidence that was put before the court, and his deputy told the court that was a key factor in their decision to illegally discipline these two young constables. And he had initially said he accepted that. Then within 24 hours, he said he was thinking of appealing that. And there was just chaos within the PSNI. Officers were coming out, quite senior officers were ringing journalists, they were making public statements, and there was a sense of things falling apart. So it was inevitable that he went. There is now a situation where the crisis is by no means over, because his deputy, the Deputy Chief Constable Mark Hamilton, is now basically in charge of the PSNI, but the policing board did not formally yesterday appoint him as acting Chief Constable. They gave him no promotion whatsoever, and there are several members of the policing board who want him out. There are lots of police officers who want him out. So this is a very chaotic situation, and in the middle of all this, you obviously have this data breach, still a massive problem in the background, police officers fearing for their safety. And one serving PSNI officer said to me on Friday, before this resignation, said of Simon Byrne, he's done more damage to the morale, recruitment and retention of officers than dissident Republican terrorists could ever hope to have achieved. The feeling of betrayal is just smothering. That's the sort of mood that you get again and again from serving officers.
And it's a very sensitive time, and it's a very sensitive job for the next chief constable of the PSNI. Who's tipped for the role, Sam?
My sense of this is that the names that are mentioned early in these processes tend not to be the people who get it. That certainly was what happened last time. The front runner, it seems at this point, is seen as Barbara Gray. She is a very senior figure in the Met Police in London. Would she want to come back into this position? There are problems at the Met, but they seem to be further along the road of recovery than the PSNI at this point. One sort of dark horse here that some people have been mentioning to me over the last couple of days is the former PSNI Chief Constable Sir Hugh Orde, as a stopgap, as an interim person to try to steady this listing ship. I'm not sure whether he'd be interested in that. I'm not sure what would happen there. But in terms of people who have credibility and people who understand Northern Ireland and understand policing here, he, I think, would be probably head and shoulders above anybody else at this point.
And when it comes to the policing board and their role in all of this, there's likely to be an examination of just how much power they have. Very little, it would seem.
Well, I don't think that's quite right in the sense that they have power, but they're not using their power. And so they look pretty inept. These are people who have basically been walked all over by the top brass of the PSNI. There have been myriad crises which have developed. They have not been able to arrest those. And even at the point here where we got to the end of the road for Simon Byrne, there were, for instance, at least two very serious complaints which had been made to the policing board chair at the weekend that I'm aware of. There may have been more than that, from former senior PSNI officers, so credible people who understand policing. And there are questions now as to whether the board should have allowed Simon Byrne to resign, because more junior officers, when they face allegations of that nature, they are often told you're not allowed to resign, you can't retire, you can't take your pension. So there is a really corrosive sense here that there is a gap between senior police officers, junior police officers. That's causing enormous friction. And the policing board, which was obviously meant to be this bulwark in the public interest, set up after the agreement, something which was key to getting Sinn Féin supporting the new PSNI, that's something which just looks like a nodding dog here. People picking up their salaries, going to meetings, actually not being on top of the problems.
Sam, thank you very much. Sam McBride there, Northern Ireland editor with the Belfast Telegraph and the Sunday Independent. Back after this.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.